This is Bold Talk Business Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, the CEO of Bold Marketing Solutions, Donna Anselmo.
This is Donna Anselmo. Welcome to Bold Talk Business Radio. Today is Tuesday, and it's the first Tuesday of the month, which means today is Space Talk Tuesday. And we love doing Space Talk every month, usually the first week of the month, because we think space is big business on the Space Coast particularly, but also really big business across the nation and the globe. And we think it's important to get to know the people who are behind space education and the space industry and making space things happen. Today in the studio, we have with us our co-host, Pete Anselmo.
And how are you?
Pete is busy looking every month for great guests to bring to us, and he found Greg Cecil. And Greg Cecil has been very involved in bringing science, math, engineering, and technology to students in the grade school and middle school and high school levels. And we want Greg to tell us a little bit about that and why it's important to educate the next group of engineers. Greg is the CEO of AeroSTEM Consulting, and we are going to be talking with Greg. And we're going to ask him first the question that always comes to my mind when I meet people who are involved with the space program, and I really want to know, what inspired you? I think space is fascinating for so many people on so many levels. What led you to the space industry to begin with?
That's a long, long story, and it goes back about a little over 40 years ago, about 45 years ago. And I was 5 years old, and my mother called me into the living room to see our black and white TV and said I needed to watch this. It was very, very important. And there were two men in these white suits jumping up and down like bunny rabbits. And I asked her what they were, and she said that they were Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin, and they were on the moon. So later on, I watched for a little while, and, attention span of a five-year-old is not very long. And then I wandered off to go play. And later on, it came time to put me to bed, and my mother searched all over the house, couldn't find me. Just looked and looked, starting to get a little panicked. And then went outside, and there I was, standing outside, staring at the moon, trying to find the astronauts.
How wonderful.
Ever since then, I've been a space buff. I grew up in West Virginia in a small town called Moundsville, and I spent my time for 22 years as a paramedic, and ended up moving to Florida, and finally saw an opportunity to get into the space program through BCC, Brevard Community College at that time. It's now Eastern Florida State College. They started a new program called Aerospace Technology, and it was to train you to be an aerospace technician. And I was part of the second class that went through the program. I actually now teach in that program, and as an adjunct professor. But I was second class and went through that program, graduated in December 2003, started work on the space shuttle in March of 2004, and immediately was put to work on space shuttle Discovery on the thermal protection system, and had a wonderful, wonderful time there until the end of the shuttle program. And then I became an educator, and I thought I would take what I've learned and my love for space and try to pass it on to kids. And also with AeroSTEM Consulting to assist companies that are doing K-12 outreach, trying to get kids interested into aerospace, especially the space program.
Greg, so, I know that you're the only Florida State certified educator and nationally certified aerospace technician in the nation. Why is that?
I think it's just the way it worked out. There's not very many nationally certified aerospace technicians right now. I'm assuming down the road that may change. There's a lot of engineers that have become school teachers. But as far as I know, I am the only nationally certified aerospace technician and educator.
You're listening to AM 1060 WMEL. This is Donna Anselmo on Bold Talk Business Radio. And we're talking space today with Gregory M. Cecil, who is also the author of Minicube, A Classroom Laboratory at the Edge of Space. I want to invite our listeners, if you're interested in speaking with Greg or asking questions about the STEM programs, why don't you give us a call at 321-241-1060. That's 321-241-1060. You're welcome to call in.
Can you give us a little description of your connection with the STEM program, the science, technology, engineering, and math in the schools?
With the schools, what I'm doing right now is Aerostem Consulting has been contracted by SpaceTech. SpaceTech is a organization that does performance-based exams for aerospace technicians and nationally certifies them. And they realize that the average age of an aerospace technician today in our space program is 53. And we're going to be having about 5 human spaceflight programs flying out of Kennedy Space Center probably within the next 4 to 5 years. So there's going to be a dire need for aerospace technicians. And so they wanted to set up some sort of outreach program for secondary school. And so they brought me on board in April 2015. And we designed and implemented a nationwide program called Schools to Space. And Schools to Space is our opportunity to go to various secondary schools, also deal with teachers doing teacher workshops, and we want to introduce young people to the STEM career of aerospace technician.
Yeah, that was kind of my question. Are they going to design a specific level? Is there, in other words, are there certain requirements to get into, let's say, the community college level versus a four-year level? How will that work?
Well, aerospace, if you get an aerospace technology degree, such as what is offered at Eastern Florida State College, that is a two-year degree. And there are some prereqs, such as English, algebra, and so on, that's done usually a semester or two before they start the program. And when they open the program, they have a new class start every semester. And that way we can move through as many young people as we can. And so we're averaging right now, I think, around 12 to 14 students per semester. And unfortunately, it's been that way since I went through the program over 10 years ago. And part of the problem is that a lot of these kids in the high schools do not know that potential that is there, that they can go and do this and actually go and work on the spacecraft. They all, a lot of them think just astronauts work at the Kennedy Space Center, which is not true at all. So
right, and there's probably a greater proportion of technicians versus astronauts when you get right to it.
The Apollo program, you had roughly, I believe, 15 astronauts in the astronaut corps. You had over 400,000 people that were working behind the scenes supporting them, from managers to janitors to accountants to engineers and, of course, aerospace technicians.
Do you find that, whether it's the STEM program or this program that you're developing, I could certainly understand around the Space Coast how it's very active and it's a program that people are aware of. But what about beyond the Space Coast? How have you penetrated into, let's say, Kansas or wherever?
We've been in Michigan. We did a week-long presentation up there discussing. We had schools coming in morning and afternoon into what was called Whitehall Theater, and did a huge presentation about aerospace technician, showed him a movie called I Want to Be an Astronaut, which follows a high school student that's working on his dream to become an astronaut. I think I reached out just that week alone to over 1,300 middle school students. We've been to South Carolina. We're looking at getting, hopefully do some work with Spaceport Savannah up in Savannah, Georgia, with their school district. But we're trying to reach out as much as we can. And especially, for me, my personal things, I love to get out to the rural areas.
Right.
Because a lot of those kids out there just think that they're stuck on the farm, they're stuck in the small town, that there's no opportunity for them. And to get out there and explain to them, hey, I came from a small town, and I ended up working on a $2 billion spacecraft. You can do this too.
Right. Now, do you find that there's a certain set of courses that are recommended that the kids have? Let's say leaving high school, you need certain background, and then you get into the community college, and they have a specific course load. How does that move from the community college, let's say, to 4 years, and then to where does the certification occur?
Okay, the certification for a nationally certified aerospace technician, you must have at least 2 years work experience or 2 years of college in the aerospace program. We're also working on an aerospace technician apprentice program. We're talking right now with two high schools in Florida. that already have aviation programs for their high school students, and we're helping them develop a curriculum that their kids can work on towards becoming an aerospace technician apprentice by the time they graduate and get an internship, hopefully with an aerospace company. Once they have 2 years of experience or a two-year college degree, they can come back and take the full national certification exam and be nationally certified.
Excellent.
You've also written the book, Classroom Laboratory at the Edge of Space, introducing the Minicube program. Gregory Cecil, as I mentioned to our listeners earlier, we're speaking with Gregory Cecil, who's an author and former space shuttle aerocomposite technician. Greg earned a Master of Aeronautical Sciences, and he's the only Florida State certified educator and nationally certified aerospace technician in the nation, which I think is really significant and tells you a lot about the fact that we have a long way to go in space education. Greg is also the CEO of AeroSTEM Consulting, and that's accessible at aerostem.net. And that company provides STEM consulting for aerospace companies who wish to start or already have a K-12 outreach program. Now, building off of his experiences in human spaceflight and education, Greg's also able to bring community to the classroom, and that's what your Minicube program is all about. I'd love to know more about the Minicube and want you to tell our listeners, what is a Minicube and how does that program work?
The Minicube is a small 5-centimeter cube, that plastic cube that is provided by a company called JP Aerospace out in California. And you, for a small price of $340, they will send you a cube, and you can have your students design and build experiments that can go inside that cube. And they have to be tiny experiments, but they can fit them in there. And we'll end up fitting about 4 to 6 experiments into one cube. Once that's done, it's sent back out to JP Aerospace out in California. They drive out to the Nevada desert. They put it on a high-altitude balloon. They send it 20 miles up. And at 20 miles up or 100,000 feet, you can see the curvature of the Earth below. You can see the band of the atmosphere, and you can see the blackness of space. And it's like an alien world there. The atmospheric pressure is only 0.1%, which is a lot like Mars. The temperature is ranging from minus 80 to minus 100 degrees, and you're now above the ozone layer, so you're being exposed to 3 different forms of UV radiation, which our ozone layer usually blocks at least 2 of them out, so we get a mild sunburn instead of a bad sunburn. So, and the balloon will hang up there for about a half hour, and that radiation, the UV radiation, will actually break down the balloon and cause it to burst, and the entire platform will parachute down back down to the Earth. Sometimes it'll land 80, 90 miles away from the launch site, and they've got to drive out in the desert and go find it. And they will retrieve it, mail it back to us, to a class, and then the class can open it up and evaluate how their experiments did. And also JP Aerospace will provide high-definition video of the mission, high-definition pictures, and a certificate thanking them for helping further the exploration of space.
Why aren't schools clamoring for this kind of a program?
Most of them are not aware of it. That's why I wrote the book. And then when I got together with Space Tech and we started Schools of Space, this is one of our key workshops that we do for STEM instructors, is to walk them through the whole process. What is really nice about the Minicube is that they can start working on this in November. It'll fly in April. They'll have it back before school is out and get a chance to evaluate their experiments. And with my students, I actually have my students as young as sixth grade write professional lab reports. And we would bound them together in a book, have them quote-unquote published and placed in the school library. And JP Aerospace also asked for copies to be placed in their library, so they're published in 2 places. So I have sixth grade students that actually have science papers that are published.
Very interesting.
Tell us a little bit about a particular experiment from a kid.
The interesting one is the first year we did this, one of the experiments that was done was they wanted to see what would happen to radish seeds in that kind of environment. So we took a seed packet, cut it in half. One half stayed here. That was the control group. The other half got to go up. When it came back, we planted both the control group and the experimental group, and we found that the experimental group germinated faster and grew better. It thrived better than the ones that stayed on Earth. And I'm like, well, that's a fluke. The next year, I had a couple teams of students that said, we'd like to repeat that experiment. And I said, well, it's not just going to be radish seeds. I want something more. So they did tomato, lettuce, roses, you know, all kinds of different plants and vegetables, and put them all in there and kept the control group down here. And we got the same result.
Really?
Yeah. And one of my sixth graders was doing some research and found that a team of Japanese scientists in Japan had sent cherry tree seeds up to the International Space Station, had them mounted outside the station for 6 months in the vacuum and the heat and the cold, and then they were returned. Those cherry tree seeds germinated faster. They were blossoming within 5 years, and normally they take 10 years to blossom. And they were scratching their head going, I don't know why. And I'm telling my kids then, see, you're doing real science. I mean, even they don't know what's going on. But that's the fun part of science, is when you get these surprise discoveries.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's very interesting.
So science is about coming up with a question. And
yes.
Hypothesis that you want to test.
Yes.
Where do these young children come up with the questions for experiments that go into space?
Well, as I teach in the Schools to Space workshop for Minikube, I tell the teachers, you introduce the kids, first you start out teaching them about the scientific method, and you teach them how to write lab reports and practice. And then you teach them about the stratosphere. You start out with the atmosphere in general and the different layers, and then you start zooming in on the stratosphere. And then what I use for a hook to get my kids interested is I show them Felix Baumgartner's record-setting jump from 24 miles up. And then we start a discussion. Why is he wearing a spacesuit? Why was he in a capsule? You know, what's going on? What kind of conditions do you think he was facing up there? Which makes them recall the lesson about the stratosphere. And then after that is when I introduce the Minikube, and I tell them, you will be sending experiments 20 miles up, 100,000 feet. And by that time, they're kind of excited about that idea. The parents are the ones that really get excited, and because they realize quicker of what the opportunity is. And that's what we do with Schools to Space. We want to bring those kind of projects to teachers and teach them the step-by-step process so that they can go ahead and go back and have their kids experience this just like my kids did.
I think the wonderful part of it is that it brings science down to a student's level where it's not some esoteric concept out away from them, where they can really get a hands-on feel of what science is all about.
Oh yeah!
In the classroom, that's tremendous. That's got to be a great attraction. Are you finding a good reception from earth science classes or school systems that have an earth science program?
My the STEM instructors I speak with in or teach in the teacher workshops for Schools to Space come from teaching some sort of engineering program that's in the high school, to aviation, to general science. And earth science actually is considered a general science in the public school system, even though it's specifically named earth science. And physics teachers and even some technology instructors that'll come in. So I'm getting a pretty well-rounded group. I've had one sign up for a teacher workshop that surprised me. They weren't a teacher. They heard about it, and they wanted to do a science experiment with their child. And as a father-daughter thing. So they went ahead and signed up for the Minikube workshop, and they had a friend that was a teacher who told them about it, and they kind of snuck in. And
How often does the Minikube program fly? Is there a schedule?
It flies every October and every April. Now, for the middle schools to be able to fly, it's a lot easier for them to do this in to fly in April. That way it gives them the entire school year to prepare their kids and get them ready for it.
We have just a few minutes left, so Greg, I have a couple of questions for you. One is, how can parents and teachers get information from you about these great programs?
Okay, Schools to Space, they can go to our website, which is www.schools-to-space.com. That's to, the word T-O, They can also contact me at aerostem@gmail.com. And I'll be happy to talk with them. We're quite willing to come out to different schools and do presentations to the students, or also do teacher workshops, and we go nationwide. So,
under 2 minutes left, so I want to ask you, how did it come that you have your photo in the Space Shuttle Atlantis exhibit at Kennedy Space Center?
If you go on the second floor of the Atlantis exhibit and go around the back, my photo is hanging on the wall there. And what happened was, there's a New York photographer, Michael Solari, who was touring OPF3 one day, and I was up by the windows of Discovery doing some tile repairs. And I had what I call my eyeballs, but they're magnifying glasses or lenses. And I put them down. I was starting to do some detailed work on a shuttle tile. I had a dental pick. And he starts going, ooh, 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 and screaming. And I'm like, what? And I'm looking around because I thought maybe I dropped something on the ship. And he says, I have to have your picture. And I looked at him and said, seriously? And he said, yes. And so I posed for a picture. And it ended up in Ad Astra magazine. And then he ended up publishing a book called Infinite Worlds. And he posted my picture in there and asked me to write a 4-page story to go with it, which I did. And then I was surprised to find out it's now hanging at the Atlantis exhibit. So I call myself a museum relic.
There you are.
Well, you have been listening to Bold Talk Business Radio for our Space Talk Tuesday segment, because it's the first Tuesday of the month, on AM 1060 WMEL. We are going to post a copy of this interview on our blog, which is boldtalkbusinessradio.com. Or boldtalkradio.com, if you want to shorten it. And you'll be able to hear it or refer it to your friends after today. So come back and listen to us next week. We have another talk show coming up, and we are going to be bringing you business news next week on Bold Talk Business Radio. Thanks for being with us. Thank you very much, Gregory M.
It was
Cecil
my pleasure.
Of AeroSTEM Consulting and the Schools to Space program for being with us today. Thanks, Pete, and thank you, Vince Young, in the engineering room.